number two, Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3. The Game, broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Hope you're having a great Monday so far. Nick Frazier alongside, discussing Nashville SC. If you were there, if you watched, what was your experience like? 615-737-1025. Travis on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says they need to treat the broadcasts like Sunday Ticket, with out-of-market games only. Let the local broadcasts be on TV. I agree with that. 100% agree with that. I love the idea of having a league pass, but there should be a low, and even if you want, you know, they move to a regional kind of, you know, broadcast format, like Tony Husband and Jamie Watson aren't the Nashville SC broadcasters anymore. They do some games, but, you know, they're doing other games. If you want to treat it that way, that's fine, but allow a local affiliate to get the games where it's on local television. And maybe they'll move to that format, but they need to.
Yeah, I think what Apple TV is kind of banking in on right now is just the Lionel Messi effect, just the Lionel Messi dollars that are just coming in.
Sure.
And I feel like afterwards, once everything kind of settles down and they've met their quota, hopefully they don't get greedy and just keep it the way it is, but hopefully once they reach their quota, they can start kind of being more lenient with the watch and viewership and, you know, the certifications and all that.
Because, like, ESPN and Fox still have games, right?
I don't believe so. No? Fox does, but ESPN does not.
Does not? Oh. Hmm. Josh from White House says, I'm not a soccer fan, but I turned it on and I watched some Saturday. I'm very happy for the fans to have a good team here to cheer for. I'll rep NSC just because they are the hometown team. This is for Nick. If you can, will you explain what the League's Cup is and its importance for those of us who are clueless?
Yes. So the League's Cup, great question, by the way. The League's Cup is a mid-season tournament that it's inaugural. It's its first ever this year. It's basically giving more significance to any team that's in North America, if it's Mexican League, Canadian team, or in the U.S., that are trying to qualify for a Champions Cup spot, which is formerly known as the North American Champions League, CONCACAF, and the top three teams win, or not win, but they place a spot in the Champions League, or Champions Cup. It's going to be hard not to say that, but Champions Cup, so meaning it's just kind of a continental tournament for North America.
Okay, I got you.
So that's kind of the importance.
Does
of
it replace
tournament.
The Open Cup, or is that still
no?
A
it's
thing?
Still a thing, and it's thank you for mentioning that, Chase, because Tata Martino, who is the Inter Miami coach, does not speak English, unfortunately, but had my answer translated. I asked him about winning a treble, because in soccer, winning a treble is pretty. It's like kind of, I wouldn't say the Super Bowl equivalent, but winning three trophies in one season is pretty crazy. And Inter Miami obviously have Messi winning the League's Cup. Now they are in the semifinals of the U.S. Open Cup. And then they're 9 points away from a wild card spot in the MLS playoff run. If they're able to make the wild card run, I would feel pretty confident that Miami could possibly win three trophies, which would probably be the most great. I'd probably say the most probably craziest thing you've ever seen in soccer in North America, because the only other team that's done that is Toronto FC back in 2017.
Hmm. So right now they're not even in the playoffs.
No, they are bottom of the Eastern Conference.
Oh,
team.
Yeah, I see that. Okay. Nashville is sixth as they get ready to resume play, 38 points. But they're in a spot that they could – I mean, they were in second. So, I mean, they get on a run here. They can move right back up. I would guess Cincinnati kind of has it locked up with the one seed at 51 points.
Maybe. Last night they lost to Columbus. I believe it was 2-0 or 2-0, one or the other. Yeah, they have a semifinal matchup coming against Miami within the coming days. So I assume that's kind of why they lost last night. I wouldn't say they were kind of giving it to Columbus, but probably not starting the majority of their starters due to the fact that the U.S. Open Cup is something they're playing for right now. So
do you think I like the fact that the Nashville SC is in the East better, because I think you can have natural rivalries like Atlanta, Cincinnati, Miami, you know, can be in there, Columbus. Do you have a preference on East or West now that they've done both?
I prefer the East. Yeah. Okay. The East is something that a lot of people are like, man, this is a challenging side of the MLS, which it is. I would not want to be in the West. There's a lot of high press, a lot of goals scored in the West, especially when we played St. Louis earlier in the season and we won. Nashville did. But the thing is if you stay in the West for a majority of the season, it's going to be more difficult than the East. I prefer the East. Just it's more of a tactically looking at it. It's a lot more pleasing to the eye.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. 615-737-1025. We didn't hear from Gary Smith yet. This was the coach of Nashville SC after the loss on Saturday.
Gary, this one went down literally to the last moment. Your guys put up a heck of a fight and were the better for the majority of the night. I guess, how do you look at this one and what do you say when you head into the locker room?
Well, this is a bit of a pill to swallow, this one. I think we can safely say when penalties go down to the goalkeepers that there's not been an awful lot to choose between the teams. I would honestly say my first emotions are that we were the better team tonight. We created the better chances. And to be perfectly honest, if it wasn't for the man of the moment in their group, we would have won tonight. The goal that he scores is just incredible, out of nothing. And with his only other shot on goal, he hits the post. I mean, I don't know too many teams that have limited Lionel Messi to as few opportunities, or this group. They've been exceptional in this tournament. But I thought our guys left absolutely everything on the field. They played with their heart on their sleeves. And to be honest, as I said, I thought we deserved a little bit more.
A lot to be proud of. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
That was Gary Smith in the post-game interview on Apple TV. And I agree, they left everything on the field. I mean, they you take Messi out of the game, and it could be completely different. I mean, that's why you get a player like Lionel Messi. He's that dude. But the one thing that I don't understand, and Nick, maybe you can help me with, but I think it's stupid, is why the hell the goalies are taking PKs? Like, just re-rack.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted, it had been so much drama, I wanted Messi and Mukhtar again. Like, I would, give me that. Give me Messi and Mukhtar. Don't make the freaking goalies go make a kick. And theirs did and ours didn't.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
I'm right there with you, but at the same time, I also understand the other side of the cards is that, you know, they're a part of the starting 11 as well. 11 on 11, you got to at least have everybody shoot one. But, yeah, I feel like it could turn into a situation maybe later, kind of how pitchers do it, where it's like pitchers only where they don't hit.
So would it have reset if they had
yes.
made? So it
yes.
We would have gotten Messi and Mukhtar again.
Yes, we would have. So, I don't know. I would like to go back in the penalties real quick about Randall Leal's penalty kick because it was blocked. I went back and watched that over and over, and then I saw a very high-definition picture. He ended up, his plant foot slipped, which caused him, I guess, to kick it down the middle, or if he was planning to go farther left or further left into the left bottom corner. But, you know, things happen, and unfortunately, you know, Randall's coming off an injury, and he played well the last, 20 minutes he was in the game, and you know, then you have him come up in PKs. Personally, I'm not saying if I were a manager, but if I was kind of setting the lineup for PKs, I would have kind of switched up the lineup a little bit. I would have had Randall go after Schaffelberg and kind of switch things up, but that's just me. Me just spitballing.
So and you know, we second guess, that's what we do sometimes. So I will ask this question, because I really don't know the answer. Panico had been the hot hand, and Gary likes to ride the hot hand. Do you think that ultimately, and during the game, I mean, he played great. And so overall, I mean, do you agree with that decision to stick with him? Do you think Willis could be back now that MLS is back? Or how do you think the goalie situation shakes out?
For the sake of the tournament, yes, he made the correct decision of starting Panico in goal. I think Panico actually gave Nashville SC a better option when it came down to penalty kicks. I'm not too sure what Joe Willis's record is taking penalty kicks, but I would have loved my chances with Elliott in there as well. So, and they did. But as for the MLS season, the rest of the season, I wouldn't be surprised seeing Joe Willis go back in between the pipes. This is his starting role. You know, Elliott got a good little run there in the League's Cup, had two shutouts going into the final match. But no, this is Joe Willis's starting 11 that he needs to be behind, and especially with, you know, the two red cards that have kind of transpired before this break in the season with Teal Bunbury and Shaq Moore, who got an immediate red card, which kind of leads to a 3-match suspension, which I'm still curious as to why, or if there has been an answer to it, if Nashville SC have appealed that process, because I remember asking Gary Smith that question back in, I think it was July, and they said that they would keep reviewing it, but I don't know if they have, if Nashville SC or the players committee has approved the rescinding of the red card or whatever, because the game that it was an immediate red card was just out of hand, refereeing. So,
gotcha. Well, it'll be interesting with that, because I forgot all about that they're going to be without some guys for.
It'll be a tough task, but another look at before we go to break is that Sam Surge started in the final.
Super Sam.
Yeah, Super Sam, which gives a lot of momentum for this starting 11 going into the second half of the season with 10 games remaining. They could easily solidify a top 4 spot as long as you have, Super Sam and Hani going back and forth scoring goals.
So they're back at it. They're back on the pitch Saturday in Atlanta against Atlanta United and Mercedes-Benz. And then on August 30th, who do they play? Then Miami, enter Miami at their stadium, and they're back in Nashville at Geodis Park, September 2nd against Charlotte. So a fun run for sure, and I think with a handful of games left, they still got a good chunk of the season left, and are in a good spot. They're in a playoff spot right now. I think you're going to have new eyeballs on Nashville SC, which is certainly. A good thing, and wish them nothing but the best moving forward. Coming up next, though, we get back into the Titans. As did Will Levis close the gap by not playing? We will discuss that coming up next. But right now, caller number 3 at 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025 will win a pair of tickets to see All-American Rejects at Municipal Auditorium on August 25th, 615-737-1025. Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Malik Willis throughout the show so far today. Yep. What were your thoughts on how Malik played on Saturday, your takeaways from his game, where we saw a whole lot of Malik Willis in the game on Saturday for the Titans?
There were a couple of throws where the accuracy was kind of strikingly bad, and that's, I don't think, entirely unexpected. It's just something that has to continue, to get better. And when you say, why it was a bad throw, a lot of times, footwork and some of that stuff can be based to it, and that's definitely all stuff that can be coached. I thought he got better as the game went on. As he got his legs more incorporated into the game, I felt like he got more confident in what he was doing in the game, and I kind of thought he picked up some confidence and played better from that aspect. But whether it was Malik or it was the wide receivers outside of Mason Kinsey, I was really disappointed in their lack of ability to get involved in the offense at all. I mean, Reggie Roberson and Treshawn Harrison and Gavin Holmes and all those guys who have looked good at times in camp were complete no-shows in the offense. Who to blame? I'm not sure. I don't think there was a ton of separation there. But that was a disappointing aspect of an offense that, rushed for almost 300 yards.
That was Corey Curtis earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. And looking at the gap between Malik Willis and Will Levis. Now, if you refer to Joe Rexroad and pretty much everybody's 53-man roster, there's one thing that is very consistent. All three quarterbacks that are in camp right now are on the roster. And I think that's how it's going to be. I think Tannehill, Willis, and Levis, obviously Tannehill's making it, but and Levis was going to make it anyway, being the 33rd overall pick. Willis was the one that everybody was unsure of. I believe he's going to make it. And as I have continued to say, it doesn't matter who the backup is. It doesn't matter who the third is. None of that matters right now. Because if Will Levis, if you truly believe Will Levis is the quarterback of the future, he doesn't need to sniff the field right now. So I just think none of this matters. Rex Road writes, Willis didn't do enough in Saturday's 24-16 preseason win at Minnesota to cement himself as QB2. Not that cementing was necessarily a possibility. Levis missed the game with a leg injury, an injury minor enough that he warmed up and that Vrabel said the Titans won't need to sign another quarterback. So Willis got the whole thing save for a couple of Mason Kinsey option plays. Willis had some good moments passing and some tremendous runs en route to 91 yards rushing and 85 passing, but he had a bad pick and a couple of missed layups as well. It's very close. It seems a lock. Both will be on the roster. And by the way, Tannehill looks very good in Tim Kelly's offense when he has time. So that's what Joe Rexroad writes in The Athletic. I think that there is a chance that Levis, you know, you can say that the gap is a lot closer. I still think as of today, Malik Willis is the backup, is the number two. But, you know, as we saw in this preseason game, only 85 yards passing. You know, I made the comment earlier that I wanted to see more out of some of these receivers that are on the bubble. I just don't know how many yards passing you're really going to get out of Malik Willis. That's just kind of the way it is right now with him. And he talked about, Malik Willis talked about balancing, making those plays with his legs.
You ever do some things with your legs too? I mean, what's the balance like when you can do that and keep drive alive?
It helps. It helps not only myself, but it helps the whole offense. As we can get going, we can convert some first downs or some third downs, some second downs, and we just keep staying in front of the sticks. That's what we didn't do in the first half.
And so, look, he has that at his, you know, disposal that he can make those big plays. It's just I got to see him make the big throws with his arm. And I think he knows that, too. I think that's one reason why he forced that throw that turned out to be the interception, that he was trying to get it in there to NWI, and it wasn't there. And so that continues to be one of the issues with him, is that, you know, you want to make plays with your legs when it's appropriate to make plays with your legs, but you also got to be able to make the big throws, and he's just not showing that consistently. He can do it. He's just not always consistent with it.
It's almost like Malik Willis, and it's just from my viewpoint, it's like he's battling within himself not to run the ball.
Yeah, because I think that's right.
Because obviously everybody wants to see this transition from Malik Willis from a running quarterback to a consistent passing, pocket passing quarterback from time to time. It's almost like he's having this difficult battle within himself to try to figure out, man, do I run it now or do I pass the ball? I'm going through this read progression, but wait, I see an open running lane. Should I run? Like, it's coming down to that, unfortunately, and I think that's what's going to hurt him going forward for Will Levis to possibly overtake that backup role when he gets healthy.
A leopard can't change its spots. I mean, that just he is what he is. Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing that – and I think the Titans have done this. You know, Tim Kelly has done this. But, I mean, you have to build – when that guy's in, the offense changes. You have to build the offense around him. Now, I mean, they're going to find out he is what he is at this point. And if he is the backup, that's fine. The hope is that neither Willis or Levis sniff the field this year. That's a perfect scenario. And then you give Will Levis time to develop behind both of them. And, you know, as practice goes on and the season goes on and, you know, maybe you see progression out of him, then he takes the job and is the backup. And then maybe, you know, it could even be the starter next year. But I just think as of right now, Willis is going to be what he is. I mean, he's going to be probably a career backup quarterback. And that's okay. I mean, if that's what he is, that's fine. It's a third-round pick. But then maybe you have that. So maybe you see enough out of him that he's the backup, even if Levis does take over. But really, a lot of time we'll tell on that. Now, one thing that Vrabel has pointed out is he is coachable. And he was asked about Willis not making the same mistake twice.
How has Willis been, because you've described all those things, how has he been as far as seeing that, recognize that, and not making that same mistake twice?
Good. Really? You know, I mean, he's been good. You know, we talked about the early on in the you know, situational work. You know, in the situational work of the 2 minute. You know, and then the other day, you know, in Green Bay, you know, looking at the tape, like nobody moved when they called it a false start. You know what I mean? Like, nobody moved. Receiver didn't move. They, you know, practice, made a mistake. But it was a good situation to say, okay, here's the process of it. It's going to start on the ready, But the ready includes the referee walking in, spotting the ball, getting past you, and then Clay or whoever the referee is blowing the whistle. Me explaining that, like, we can't do that when refs aren't here, so Corey just snapped the ball, right? And so it was like, well, no, we didn't put it ready for play means that the official is going to pass you, right? And then they're going to blow the whistle. Then we have to snap it and have a play ready. So that was good that that came up. I'm sure the next time that you get a you know, the ball is going to be, the clock's going to start on the ready for play and not the snap, that Corey will be better, Brewer will be better, you know, Malik, you know, Corey snapped the ball. So in that instance, it was a really cool situation just to be able to say, guys, if there's a review and it goes to a running clock or there's a 10-second runoff, this is how it operates. Instead of just continuing to show them, these guys feeling it and saying, okay, the umpire is going to come in, he's going to spot it, they're still going to give them time to back away, and then they're going to blow. So it was, that happened the other day, and so hopefully we can create that this week and get some officials here. I think they're going to still come, so we'll try to get that, you know, covered again this week.
I don't know if he's always done this, but I feel like lately Vrabel has been much better about explaining situations like that. And I also like how he like, it's a cool situation because he loves coaching. Like that, that's one thing I can tell you, that like he, you can tell he loves coaching. Like he loves being able to take a moment and coach a player. And so he, I think he got very detailed there on some of the things that Malik has had to go through that you can't really fabricate. It just has to happen. And then you have the, and that's where it's the cool moment. Then you have, this is where I can coach you, and that, and we can point this out on film, and this is what happened. This is what you should do in this situation, and yada yada yada. But, you know what that means moving forward for Malik Willis. I mean, time will tell. But I thought that was a really good explanation by Vrabel.
Yeah, no, like you said, Vrabel is a big teacher of the game. Obviously, for me, he's a player's coach. This guy knows the ins and outs of the X's and O's of football, and the fact that he's able to kind of, you know, I don't want to say give Malik a pass, because earlier in the show he was quite upset with his, you know, read progressions and throwing that interception. But, you know, like you said, it's just something that it can't be fabricated. It has to actually happen. And it was good to see Vrabel kind of give a little bit of leniency towards Malik Willison, kind of catch him a break a little bit.
Coming up next, we'll ask Jonathan Hutton what he thought about the Titans' performance against Minnesota and this week, everything moving forward. But your favorite game, Silly Underdog Picks, is back. Sign up today at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports here on 1025, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Say hello to Jonathan Hutton from Outkick. Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan, as we do every Monday at 10:30. Hut, what's going on? How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Chase. Hope things are well.
Yeah, just breaking down this Titans game. Is they got a win, which means absolutely nothing in the preseason, but we saw Malik Willis for the entire game, you know, albeit a couple of snaps from Mason Kinsey at quarterback towards the end. I thought it was up and down. I thought the interception was pretty bad. He made some good plays with his legs. Do you feel like that he's still ahead of Will Levis as the number two, or do you think this competition is a little bit closer after the performance we saw Saturday night?
Just based on what I've seen, yeah, I think he's ahead of Will Levis. I think he's the backup right now, the QB2. I agree with what you said. I mean, the game is starting to slow down for him a bit. That's a good thing. He's not perfect by any means. He does deserve credit for the improvement from year one to now. As a runner, extremely gifted at times in practice and talking with some of those either with the team or with the media that were in Minneapolis last week. He was decisive, on point. But in the game, Chase, as you well know, and so do our listeners, that he is hit or miss, and it's an uphill climb, even with the drops by the receivers in Saturday night's game. That's the good and the bad of Malik Willis. It illustrates why it's so important to keep Ryan Tannehill upright and clean in the pocket, because neither Malik Willis or Will Levis is ready to be a starter right now in the National Football League. But for right now, as we sit here going into the final week of the preseason, yeah, I think Malik Willis is the team's backup QB.
And what could that mean? You know, I think the overall question moving forward is, what could that mean for the future? You know, if they decide that this is, in fact, the last year for Ryan Tannehill and they want to move on, this time next year, are we talking about Malik Willis and Will Levis fighting it out to be the Titans starter?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah. And it all of that really hinges on the improvement of Will Levis. You know, like, I'm still waiting on that big jump. And what we don't know is the injury and how long that's going to set him back. The good news is there that they didn't go out and immediately want to bring in a QB, that, you know, they know, well, that whatever the injury is, isn't something long-term, which is good. And it was good to see him warming up prior to the game in Minneapolis at US Bank Stadium on the field. So with all that being said, there's a long time between now and then. It feels like forever ago that we were talking about Ryan Tannehill and whether or not he was going to be on this roster or not. And that was January, February, March. So, you have to wait and see. And you have to also see what the market bears in terms of what quarterbacks are out there on the free agent market. And that also, of course, would impact Ryan Tannehill and what they choose to do with him.
We're talking to Jonathan Hutton from OutKick. With the Treylon Burks injury, and it could have been a lot worse. It looks like he could be back for the start of the regular season, give or take. This receiver battle gets even more interesting, because then it's okay. Well, are you going to have to keep an extra one than you had originally planned, because Burks may miss week one? Was it going to be five? Was it going to be six? And then Kyle Phillips gets hurt. Kyaris Jackson. I mean, they have guys that have gotten banged up in training camp and in the game. So how do you view this receiving battle right now outside of the spots that we know where they're going to go?
Man, I mean, it's brutal right now. We know what Burks means by receiving core, Chase. And if you think about it, just think of the feeling that everyone had whenever he went down with a knee injury Wednesday. You know, that feeling is what I think everyone had, and what you get with a lot of different players on this roster if they get hurt. You know, the margin for error, especially on offense, the margin for injury on offense is extremely thin, and Burks is a great example of that. With that in mind, I mean, the depth chart is going to take a hit, I think, because of that feeling, because of the fact that you have to have him and Hopkins. And by the way, it's evident whenever one or two are not out there during a practice. It's
sure
you see what the offense looks like. That's what they're working with. Chris Moore's, you know, next on that depth chart. But beyond that, Chase, Racy McMath, you know, Colton Dow has been banged up. Mason Kinsey does a little bit of everything. Reggie Roberson has had flashes here or there. But yeah, there's not much that really stands out. So what comes after that? Probably the waiver wire. If in fact that we're going to see Burks wait a little while. And because of his value, I wouldn't be surprised if – I know that Vrabel said they're going to sit back and make sure he's ready before they bring him back. But they avoided catastrophe. But I would make sure he's 101% before making sure he's back for week one, because of that feeling that you have if he's not back for the season, and the importance of just the threats involved there. They have complementary pieces around the threats of the offense in the passing game. And right now that's Burks and Hopkins.
Talking to Jonathan Hutton, one bright spot that I thought has shown itself throughout, you know, training camp, and then we saw it Saturday night, is Tajay Spears. I like what he brings to the table. They haven't really used him as much in the passing game yet, and I think we're going to see that more in the regular season. But what are your thoughts on the third round pick?
He's an impact player for Tim Kelly's offense and his playbook. I mean, he not only is he going to be, he already is. And I joked last night with John Burton, Chase, on Channel 5. I can't. Just when I think I can't personally lack any more athleticism or feel like I'm, you know, not athletic at all, a guy who reportedly does ACL or suffers from arthritis in his knee is the best player on the field Saturday night in Minneapolis. I mean, the Titans have found a weapon in him, in Spears. He brings a speed element to the offense, not just in the run game, but that is severely lacking in the passing game. And he has that burst, that quickness, the vision that you saw whenever the offensive line opened some things up for him on that touchdown run, that 33-yarder. That he has the ability, we've said this throughout the offseason, he has the ability to carry some of the load in the run game. He can be a three-down back if the Titans need him to be. But that should pay off for Derrick Henry as the season progresses too. And the way things stack right now, it looks very similar to last year. They just don't have Dontrell Hilliard. And Spears is a much more explosive, dynamic version based on what I've seen than Hilliard. But you have Henry, you have Spears. Last year, his son Haskins made this roster, and so did Julius Chestnut in week one. Not only appeared in six games, but he was a part of the four backs. They really carried five because they carried a fullback. He was a part of the four backs. Chestnut was, and Chestnut also looked pretty good last week.
Yes, he did. The kicking battle continues to be an interesting one. I'll tell you what I said earlier in the show, and this is what I think is going to happen. I think Caleb Shudak is going to kick week one. Beyond that, I'm not guaranteeing anything because I think there's some veterans out there that they could wait till after week one and not have to guarantee the salary. And it also depends on, you know, other kicking battles around the league and who gets cut. But I don't think either one of these guys, Trey Wolf, I think, is taking himself out of the competition. You can't hit it, even though it went in, you can't hit it upright on an extra point when you're in a kicking battle, and he did that. I just don't think either one of them has the confidence of the coaching staff like they should. So how do you think that shakes out?
Man, I'm concerned about it, and I look at it from this angle, Chase. I don't know if the kicker is on the roster currently, even for week one. I mean, I'm thinking the way you are. It's a week-to-week deal. There's no reason why Wolf at this point can't beat out Shudak. I mean, with a strong week, they need to finish. And, you know, it's just this is a defensive-led football team that is run first on offense. And with that, the NFL set up to be close, tight windows anyway. And with that, you've got to have someone that doesn't have to hit 100% of his kicks, but someone that you know is going to go out there and get the job done with the game on the line with that kick. And those are the ones that I just sit there and think, man, is Shudak ready for that moment? Are these two ready for that moment? And I mean, some kicking battles, Chase, as you've well seen throughout the years, that, you know, that they would set up things so that the veteran felt a little pressure, you know, in camp, but there's really no battle. Last year, Brett Kern faced the pressure because he knew there was a battle with what they were doing at punter and what they were doing with Stonehouse. This year, there's no setup for Shudak. This is a back and forth deal. And, you know, they didn't get as many looks as they wanted to in last preseason game. I would suspect that they make sure that they get the most looks possible going into week three and the preseason game against the Patriots, because, you know, they've got to set up some situations to where they feel comfortable going into week one. There are 16 days between the final preseason game and week one in New Orleans. And there's no way you start that 16-day countdown feeling comfortable at kicker, no matter what happens against the preseason game against the Patriots. They're all 91 players on each roster, and we will see them cut down on the 29th to 53. There will be a lot of kickers available, and I think there will be a lot of tryouts, a lot of getting some looks inside the practice bubble and outside of the facility over at St. Thomas Sports Park.
Yeah, I do too. With the final preseason game on Friday, the joint practices with the Patriots have been canceled because of the Bolden situation in New England. They went back to New England, so you don't get that evaluation process. Vrabel was asked about it. How do you think he handles the final preseason game, and could we maybe see Ryan Tannehill get a series or two?
You know, we haven't traditionally seen Tannehill get a series or two. That's what's interesting. Same for Henry. Look, I think it impacts I think it impacts their overall work on game day. I don't know if it necessarily impacts Tuesday or Wednesday's work, but Friday night's where we could see a few more starters in action than what we would have likely, just due to they want to see them in live action and reps against other starters. And we mentioned the wait between now and New Orleans. He may want to see some guys get up to speed, get some work, all things that would have been accomplished in pads and these joint practices. But, you know, to play or not to play, I absolutely would get some snaps in. But at the same time, I understand the injury concern in a live game situation. But, I mean, you're playing your offensive linemen. I would make sure that you play your starters. And I'm not putting Tannehill out there unless the entire starting offense is going to get some reps. But think about this. The players at quarterback, this is the quarterback, Chase, who did play or will play the preseason. Mahomes, Rodgers is going to play this week. Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, Tua Tagovailoa, Kenny Pickett, Jordan Love, Geno Smith, Mac Jones, Ritter, Stroud and Young. Richardson has played, but he didn't play this past week, which was a head scratcher. Fields, Herbert, Watson, Prescott, Lawrence, Goff, Carr, Mayfield. I may be leaving some out.
Yeah.
Plus Tannehill. Those are the guys who sat. And if you really look at those two lists, those are the haves and the have nots for the most part. So, even if they're just getting four to six pass attempts, there's a reason why Super Bowl winning coaches are putting their Super Bowl winning quarterbacks on the field in limited action during the preseason. And most of those teams also had joint practices. This is an offense, Chase, that comes out notoriously slow over the last 2 years under what we've seen from Todd Downing. Slow, not just offensively scoring points, but like in week ones. They sucked against Arizona. They sucked against the New York Giants. And what they can't do is go down to New Orleans and do the exact same thing under Tim Kelly. I'm not saying that four or five snaps get you that. But again, there's a reason why good offenses, by and large, have their quarterbacks in the game this time of year in limited action in games that don't mean anything, because I do think it means something just to get some rhythm and timing down, especially, by the way, with a new center and a new offensive line, with guys calling protections and Tannehill changing plays at the line of scrimmage, which I doubt Malik Willis and Will Levis would be doing as much as.
Scared money don't make money. That's how I look at it. I would play him for a series or two, but we will see what Mike Vrabel ultimately decides. Hutt, appreciate it as always, and we'll do it again next week.
That sounds good, Chase. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
You too. Jonathan Hutton, Outkick, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. What do we think Mike Vrabel will do? We'll hear from the head coach next here on Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. It was Mike Vrabel on not having the joint practices with the Patriots, if that might change his way of thinking. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. It's basically what I took away there. Chase McCabe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming up next. Looking forward to that. They'll break down the game Saturday and look ahead to this week. Here's my thing. I just use the phrase, scared money don't make money. And I do feel like there are times that Vrabel looks at this as he doesn't want guys to get hurt and they're getting the work in practice and all of that, and so they don't play in the preseason. If Patrick Mahomes is playing in the preseason and Aaron Rodgers is playing in the preseason, why can't Ryan Tannehill? Explain that to me. Like, why can't Ryan Tannehill go out there for a couple of series? I really don't think it's going to hurt anything. Getting a rhythm with the new offensive line. Hell, even put D-Hop out there for a series or two. You don't know if you're going to have Treylon Burks for week one. So let's see it in a game. You can't replicate, even in a joint practice, you can't replicate a game. You can in preseason. So I just want to see it for a series or two. If they go out, if they play a series and it's a 6-7-8 play series and they go down and they score a touchdown, hit the showers, boys. Good job. We're done. Offensive line too. And then you let everybody else go out there, and that can help you decide the bottom of the roster. I just don't see the harm in it. You know, if the only one that I will give you is Henry, But even if he was out there, I don't think it's the end of the world. Here was Vrabel and what would go into his decision to play guys.
What will go into your decision about whether or not some of the guys who haven't played yet in the preseason, whether you play them or not, and what are the kind of the pros and cons of getting guys work and before the season starts?
I mean, just want to try to get everybody, you know, ready for the season, but also try to get them to the season. You know, it's somebody's got to play, you know, and but just making sure that they're conditioned and, you know, Harold hasn't played. You know, Harold may need to go out there, and for example, right? It's a lot of different things that we look at, you know, individually. Like to, you know, see how we come out of practice the next couple of days health-wise, and then be able to determine that these guys will go out there and play for a little bit. I don't know how much or how little.
So obviously still evaluating it, but not ready to make that answer. I get that. But I think there's going to be a benefit if you can get a couple of real-time game reps for this first team offense, especially the defense can be a little different, but you know, if you marched Byard and Simmons and Autry and some of those guys out there for, again, a series or two, I don't think it's the end of the world. But you know, this was the answer that kind of gave me the answer that he's already kind of made up his mind. This was, he continued, because he continued to get pressed on, you know, what he's seen out of the first team offense and if he would want to see, you know, the starters get in.
Yeah, I mean, I'll play this for you.
Yeah.
Little.
Do you feel like the first team offense got enough work out of those two days in Minnesota that may not be necessary to run them out there Friday night?
I mean, I thought we got good work. I don't know how much is enough or how much is, you know. Yeah. DeAndre's played in a lot of football games. Ryan's played in a lot of football games. And Derek's played in a lot of football games. Other than that, everybody that was healthy played, you know. Wesco had some good blocks in practice. He had some good blocks last night. Has some things he needs to fix, but wanted him to go out there. You know, because what happens is the less guys that you play, the more snaps that the special teams guys get on defense or offense, and the more snaps they get on special teams, and, you know, run out of IVs.
That was Mike Vrabel, and I think he basically gave you the answer when he said Hopkins has played a lot of games, Tannehill's played a lot of games, Derek's played a lot of games. They're not going to play. That's my takeaway from that, and I don't agree with it. I mean, it doesn't matter. And, you know, Shane from Ashland City said, think it's more of a past thing. Tannehill has been prone to injury. Last year was the first time as a Titan that he had to deal with injury, a major injury. And again, I just can't subscribe to this whole, like, being scared of putting a guy out there in the preseason because you don't want him to get hurt. It's a new offense with a new offensive coordinator in Tim Kelly and an entirely new offensive line. A series or two. That's all I'm asking for. We'll see what happens as the week goes on. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming up next as they will give their thoughts on the preseason game Saturday and the week ahead. We're back tomorrow starting at 9, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.